Okay, so I'm going to talk some more about this, but I just want to give a brief sense of it. So everything. So the first, if we just go, if I just remind us of the first two hours, then look at the third. What happens in the first hour of the Duat, the first hour of the Book of Gates, is that we're moving away into the transitional space, into the inner desert. And the experience there is the experience of the horizon, of passing into the western horizon. So it's a sort of powerful transitional place. We're met by the beings of the inner desert and reminded that this is a collective work, of working really with, not just for ourselves, but to enable the universe to continue moving. And one of the things that happens to us there is we encounter a very particular form of the bark of Ra that has the beetle god Kephira surrounded by the serpent Mehen. And in a way, this is like the preparatory process. So the key images you get really in the first hour is you get the idea of the horizon, you get the bark of Ra, you get the sense of being connected to this deeper creative process of the universe. The bark of Ra also has to pass through two staffs, the staff of beings that are holding the two staffs. One is the staff of Ra, the other is the staff of Set, who is the opposing energy. So again, you get this sense of passing from the outer world into the inner world, into the western horizon, and this idea of passing through opposites. Now, in order to go into the second hour, you have to pass through the serpent guardian of the inner desert, who in a certain sense is the goddess of Renenutet, who is the goddess of the harvest, who is this kind of serpent mother, who in a sense is almost part of every serpent you come across in the whole Book of Gates. And one of the repeating images you get in the Book of Gates is the image of the making of bread and the brewing of beer. Now, these are in Egyptian tradition, these are the staples of life. And the image idea is that the person who becomes true of life, true of voice, is worked on in the way that grain, in the way that the barley grain is worked on to become fresh bread, to become beautiful beer. So there's a whole organic process that happens where the kind of raw material of the human being is taken and is transformed through all the various things that happen to becoming eventually one who is true of voice. And the image of one who is true of voice is this image that we have in the front of the Book of Gates of the woman who with a red ribbon around her head sitting, holding the star that is the star of her own being, sitting on the serpent who represents all the energies of life, all the creative and destructive powers of life. And she is seated in that place, in her own place, holding the star that is her own unique expression of her own light. Right, so the image of the human being that the book offers us is one who is like a generative star, seated on in the midst of the serpent energies and able to work creatively with them, whether they're positive or negative. So that's the idea of the finished product of the book. Now, and that's why there's an offering phrase which I'll talk a bit about this afternoon that happens at the end of most hours where there is the offering of bread, the offering of beer, and then crucially the offering of cool, sweet water. It's a big thing. This really. So the bread sustains, beer intoxicates, and water cools.
It's almost alchemical.
It is alchemical. Alchemy is the word alchemy comes from the Arab word alchemet, which means the Egyptian art. So this is the root of alchemy. In these books, you find the root of alchemy.
What are they? Bread, beer.
Bread, beer, and cool, sweet water. Now, specifically in the third, I'll just make a little reference to some of the things that happen in the third hour, and then we'll come back to it this afternoon. So in the third hour, because in the second hour you've encountered those who stand for Ra, those who stand for Apophysis. You've had to look at those opposites, and then you encounter in the second gate. You encounter this purifying process that happens, where the first gate is just a simple encounter with the serpent, but the second gate is you have these various processes. You first of all encounter the nine mummies. Now, nine in Egyptian tradition is a creative number. The gods are always nine gods, so so the idea of this is the energy of creation.
Why and nine?
I don't know, it's just their thing. That's they regarded nine as a complete number, 3 to the power of 3. You know, so again it's this idea of opposites coming to an union, and that magnified 3 times. Right, so the gods are generative and continually bring opposites together and bring fresh life out of the apparently incompatible opposites. The encounter is also an encounter with the dead, because they're mummified. These are mummified figures, but they are alive. So again, you've got this sense of opposite: the dead that are alive, contemplating the living who are going down into the places of death. So again, it's an encounter, it's a sort of and whatever happens in that encounter happens. But as you get past that, you then have the shining one who's wrapped in linen, whose hands you cannot see, who has got this mysterious activity, who in the service of Ra absorbs all that is disturbed. You then have this movement through the gate where you're encountering the energies of the two serpents, so the hot serpent, the cold serpent. So again, the activity of opposites as a purification process. And then as we come out, we have the encounter really with the serpent guardian of the second gate, which is the one called the coiling one, who has this image or this straightness and serpentine. So again, we're having an encounter with opposites within this kind of living being, and who helps us move into the third hour proper. Now, what happens in the third hour is the bark of Ra goes into the bark of the earth. It's a penetration into the deeper part of the earth, represented by the great bull. Lots of things we can say about the bull, but anyway, it does represent as the kind of Taurian energy. It's the solidity of the earth, but it's also this passageway.
That wouldn't have anything to do with the sacred
bulls. The apis bulls, yes, it does. It has everything to do with the apis bulls, but I'll talk about that this afternoon because there's not time. So the bull image is a very ancient image connected with the image of the god Osiris, who is the dead god who continually is reborn.
I thought that came in much later.
No, it's a very no. It's a very ancient image in Egypt. No, very, very ancient. It's one of the oldest Egyptian images. The image of the great bull, and you find in the Old Kingdom the king who is the bull of his father. It's a very ancient and important image, and it stands for Osiris, who are penetrating into the deeper elements of the earth at this point. Now, the other thing that you have in the third hour, though, this idea that things are not as they seem. In the upper register of the book, you have these nine shrines, who are with this glittering serpent, the serpent called glistering or glittering. So you have these beautiful shrines, but Ra, in the journey, Ra says to them, "You who appear beautiful are the ones who are greedy and dark." So it represents the kind of images, almost like the things of life that appear beautiful on the outside, but actually inside are empty and are actually appear to give but actually take.
Ooh, narcissism.
Narcissism, exactly that, right? No, exactly that. The narcissism is a real example of that. That apparently the beautiful outside, that inside is greedy and needy, and but appears completely self-sufficient and beautiful. So the image here are of the image really of part of my way of thinking is this is the classic idol, as opposed to the icon, which is the image that takes you through into new life. This is the image that actually sucks your life and enchains you. So this is all the kind of idea of addiction, trapping, being trapped by something. And so one of the experiences of the third hour is to use discernment, is to be aware of when something, being present and noticing when something appears beautiful, but actually something feels wrong, and to trust your impulses on that. That this idea is further heightened by you get this the image of the lake of fire. Again, I'll talk about that more this afternoon, because it's a very ancient image, the lake of fire. Find it massively used in Christianity, because where the poor old damned get sent. The original Egyptian idea is that if you look deeply into the lake of fire, and if you can cool yourself so that the flames do not burn you, so if you can be still and centered, the lake of fire becomes the lake of sweet water, becomes the mirror within which you can see the deeper nature of yourself and your life and the life of the universe. But in order to do that, you have to sit with the fire and cool yourself, so you can see past the patterns, past the shapes, into the underneath. On the other side, lower register, there is a whole sequence of beings that are holding staffs, and the staff in a way represents intention, represents will, it represents the capacity to direct ourselves. And right at the beginning of that lower register, you have a being who's got a staff, and with their staff, they've flipped Apophis upside down. Now, to be turned upside down is to lose ground. So Apophis is energy of chaos and opposition, is necessary in the universe. So Apophis is never killed. It's sometimes, but is bound and held, and sometimes aspects of it are cut off. But in this instance, it's being the being is using their will to turn the disturbing energy upside down and to make it lose power. Supporting the person doing it are nine beings those who on behalf of Ra challenge Apophis. Beyond that again, there are nine figures, again holding one hand holding the Waz scepter, the other hand holding the key of life. So these are keys almost really into the work of this third hour, which is working with disturbance, working with deception. What is it that helps us here? And what is it that helps us here is the capacity to align with our deeper will, to connect to our life force, and then within that, to see into the nature of things, to see past the surface image. And to know, when am I dealing with an image that is an icon that takes me somewhere deeper? When am I dealing with an idol that actually takes me into an empty place and chains me to it? So that's the whole territory of this third hour. So plenty for us to do. Yeah. But now it's time for lunch.